Oh, man. Let's thank PJ and the band. You know, I don't know that there's a song that captures the weight of Mother's Day, which, by the way, happy Mother's Day to those of you mothers here today, than that song. I mean, this whole idea of, you know, you become this rock in kids' lives, and fathers, mothers alike, you know, fathers, be good to your daughters because they'll learn to love like you do. You know, daughters become lovers who turn into mothers. I mean, you know, this is hugely tied in to, you know, how we send our children off into the world. And so, moms, thank you for the investment you've made into our lives. Maybe you're not a mom, but you've invested in somebody's life that way as a mother figure. And so we're just thankful. I know I'm thankful for my mother today. I'm thankful for my wife, the mother of my children, my wife's mother, who shaped her life, who we just celebrated her life in her passing of, you know, a week and a half ago. You know, just thank you. Thank you for being those roles in our lives. Well, today we are in week number two of this series called Love Dare, and what we're talking about today has a great deal to do with this whole concept of the way we raise our children, the model we set for them, the picture of what it means to love. And, you know, we're asking the question, as Eric, you know, said, is it possible for two people to fall in love and then stay in love forever, for the rest of their life? And I think that we, in our heart of hearts, I think, contrary to what we see all around us, I think we think it is. I think we feel like we're a candidate for this. If we could just find that someone out there somewhere, somehow, you know, that's out there in the universe somewhere, I could find that one person, if you think it's got to be a one person or not, you know. But if I could find that person, I could stay in love forever. And so we're gonna go after this today, or continue to go after this. My name's Kurt, by the way. It's great to have you here with us today. And last week, I introduced you to Mr. and Mrs. Mugg. Everybody say hi to Mr. and Mrs. Mugg. They're glad to see you today. And we learned from Mr. and Mrs. Mugg last weekend that we have stuff inside of us. And when we, you know, have moments where we bump in marriage... I actually told my team I wasn't going to make a mess again today, but, you know, when we bump in marriage, stuff comes out, and we've realized there's stuff going on inside of me, and sometimes it's only when we're in a romantic relationship that we really get bumped hard, and this stuff begins to come out, and it's because it's in there. It's not that the other person's bringing it out. It's just in there, and so if you haven't met Mr. and Mrs. Mugg, you really need to meet them, so go back and listen to the podcast from last week, and you can hear about them, and I brought them today because I thought they could really benefit from what we're talking about today, so they're going to sit up here with me, and we discovered that, you know, this is something we have to pay attention to. They taught us that we have to pay attention to what's going on in our heart and the junk in our heart, the stuff from past relationships, from, you know, our culture of growing up years, so on and so forth. There's all this junk, and we have to work through that. And so today, I want to talk about how every one of us that are in love, want to be in love, are in a significant relationship in some way, shape, or form, how we make a decision on a daily basis. And it's kind of a fill-in-the-blank choice. In fact, you may not even be aware that you're making this decision. And so hopefully today I can give you a word picture to help you understand that when these moments come throughout your day, you can choose how to respond here, because this is a key to staying in love. And interestingly enough, this is something that happened very intuitively for you when you fell in love. All right? It's just that the longer our love relationship goes, we begin to kind of fall out of this practice, and it begins to undermine our relationships. So I want to take us to a passage in the Bible today. You've probably heard this passage before. Some of you maybe didn't even realize it was from the Bible. All right, so this is from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And this is a letter the Apostle Paul writes to a bunch of new Christians in the city called Corinth, new believers. They're trying to figure out what it means to follow God in their lives. And chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians is generally known as the what? The love chapter, right? You've probably heard this at a wedding, or maybe it was even in your wedding. And so what I want to do is read a portion of it for you this morning, and here's why. In this passage, there's this moment where you're just kind of like, oh, yeah, I get it all, Kurt. It makes sense. Love, 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 love. You know, it's not the easiest thing to do, but I get it. But there's this one phrase, and specifically that really these couple words that when I read this growing up, even into my young adult years, I just remember going, oh, gosh, I don't think that's very good advice. I mean, I know it's in the Bible, and Paul's saying do this, but I just don't see how this makes sense at all. In fact, I've probably counseled and encouraged people against what Paul says, all right? But what I've discovered as I've matured over time, which we talked about at First Wednesday this last week. Anybody at First Wednesday this week? You guys enjoy First Wednesday? Yeah. Awesome, awesome night. Next First Wednesday is actually last Wednesday of July. We're bumping it to the end. So if you want to go kind of next level, you know, beyond what we do on weekends, and we encourage you to come there. We're really in a growth track there. But we talked about there how training happens and growth happens over time. It doesn't actually take place all at once. And so over the years, I've learned this. And really what the Apostle Paul is saying is there's a really, really, really powerful principle. And he tries to make one statement, but he really makes four little statements in this one statement. And he's trying to communicate something very big. And it just seems like bad advice. All right, you're going to hear it and you're going to be like, oh, that's terrible. Why would I do that? All right, so I want to read it for us this morning. And before I get to verse 7, which is where he says this, I want to begin with verse 4 that kind of leads up to it. So here's what he says. Paul says, love is patient. Well, yep, got that, Paul. Love is kind. Check, got that. It does not envy. That makes sense. Envy is not good in relationships. It does not boast. Okay, I need to not be like an arrogant, you know, husband or an arrogant wife. All right, it is not proud. You know, pride can be a problem in a relationship. Got that, Paul? I'm on top of that. It does not dishonor others. Okay, that's a really good idea. You know, dishonoring anybody that's a significant relationship, really anybody, period, but especially significant relationships, not a good thing. All right, got that, Paul? It is not self-seeking. All right, that's hard. I like to be selfish in my relationships, but all right, I've got that. I'm going to work on that one. It is not easily angered. All right, anger issues, we've all got those, right? Every single one of us in some way, shape, or form, this comes out. I mean, all this is true, right? You're like, I get it. It's not easy. Paul, thanks for the reminder. And you read it and you're like, yeah. And then here's a big one that he comes to. It keeps no record of wrongs. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but some of you are really good at this one, all right? You like knock this one out of the park. Not keeping, but the keeping part. Or maybe you're not married, but you grew up in a home with a mom and a dad that were really good at this one. Like, whenever they had an argument, like, your mom would, like, unroll the filing cabinet of the last 5 years, you know? And she'd be like, on May 5th, 2011, you know, and you're like, Mom, my word, you should teach history. You're so good at remembering the past, you know? Or your dad sits you down, and he's like, well, son, let me tell you where it all started. It was 4:30 in the afternoon. You're like, my word, you guys have some baggage, you know. And so that's a whole other, like, message right there. We won't go down that path. But he says it keeps no record of wrongs, all right? So we all need to work on that. Gets to verse 6. He says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. And what he says here is you need to celebrate the wins. Look for the positives. Don't try to not focus on the negatives. And then he gets to verse 7. In verse 7, he takes this one Greek word and he breaks it down into like four different words. And he comes up with four very specific statements to make one big point. And if you were to break each one individually down and take it out of the bigger statement, it doesn't really carry the weight of the whole statement. And so Paul's getting right here to one of the most important habits. In fact, one of the most important practices in any love relationship. And it's a key to what it means to stay together. All right, so here's what he says in verse 7. He says, it, meaning love, always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. He says, it always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Now, if you grew up with the King James Version, which I know some of us did, you maybe heard it this way. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. So, I mean, when we hear that little phrase that says it believes all things or always trusts, you're like, whoa, just a second, Paul. I mean, that almost sounds like you're saying love is blind. Almost like there's certain things I just need to overlook. It believes all things? I mean, what if I have evidence to the contrary? I mean, what isn't that unhealthy? Isn't that unhealthy to not, like, just face things in reality? And, I mean, believes all things, you know, trusts in all things, always trusts. Paul, I don't know if I can do that one. I don't know if I can encourage people that direction. Apostle Paul, he's basically saying, hey, there's a really valuable thing right here. And he doesn't just say it with a phrase. He says it with four different little phrases. So I want to kind of explain to you for the rest of our time this morning, to the best of my ability, what this kind of looks like, all right? And I want to give us a picture of this, and then I want to come back and reread 1 Corinthians 13 through a different lens after we, you know, kind of get this picture over these next few minutes and just kind of create kind of a new paradigm for us, all right? So in every relationship, there is expectation, right? We have expectations of what our spouse is going to do, our partner is going to do, and at the same time, we also have our behavior, how we behave, you know, what we actually do. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but usually there's a gap between what we expect and what we do, right? And so, you know, sometimes it's like, well, I'm really excited that, you know, you said you're going to do this, but every time I wait and look and you haven't done it yet. So there's a gap in the middle, all right? And so I see some of you nodding. So you get this, right? I mean, you understand this. And some of you are doing this. Don't do this, all right? This isn't like a nudge your spouse moment right here, all right? So you're like, you said you'd be home at 4 and here it is 4:30 and you're not here. You said that, you know, you'd pick the kids up every Wednesday, but every Wednesday about 3 I get a call and you're like, oh, I'm not going to make it. Or you said, you know, you'd never do that again, and here we are in the same situation. So in every love relationship, there's a gap between what we expect and what we do. And it can be deep, it can be shallow, it can be, you know, specific, it can be general, it can be like what you said when you were engaged and what you actually do, it can be something you said in your vows and what you actually do, it can be mundane, it was like, well, my dad always fixed that. And, or, you know, you want me to mow what? I mean, you know, it's like there's a gap right here, right? And so there's always, in every relationship, no relationship is void of this. So here's the choice, all right? Here's the choice. We put something in this gap right here, in this space, and we either choose to believe the best or we choose to assume the worst. We always do. We always fill in the gap. And if you don't know which one you do, by the way, just ask your spouse after service. They'll gladly tell you which one you do, all right? That it's hard for us to see this. You know what your spouse does, but you don't know if you tend to believe the best or assume the worst. Just ask them. They'll give you a really good answer, all right? Now, here, you know, as we think about this, what happens here in the middle, all of this begins in our mind. Right? This isn't what we say initially or what we do. This is a mental thing. This is what we begin to conjure up in our minds. It's when we begin to realize there's a gap between expectation and what's actually taking place, and we fill in the gap with assuming the worst or believing the best. So, for instance, you know, we go to, you know, she's been really busy at work, and I know she said she'd be home at this time, but I'm sure something came up, and that's why she's not home yet, and so we believe the best. Or we say, I can't believe it. I got her a watch for Mother's Day. She never pays attention to it. She's late again. And we assume the worst. Or when it comes to finances, we say, well, you know, I know he's off budget again. Believe the best. Believe the best. Okay. I know he's been traveling a lot, and he probably hasn't had the time to, you know, reconcile his side of the budget and what he's spending here or there. And so I'm sure there's a good reason. Or he is terrible with money. Terrible. His dad was terrible. His mom was terrible. His grandpa. It's never going to get better. And we assume the worst. And so during this time, when there's a difference between expectation and behavior, we fill in the gap. And we begin to develop an attitude about it. And the point is every relationship experiences the gap. All right? And the gap, what starts in our mind, eventually turns into our actions and our words and our behaviors. Now, there's two things that shape or determine how we fill this gap in right here. All right? The first is what we see. Well, I see it's 4:00 and he's not home. And so, you know, we move to the behavior. Well, he didn't come through again. You know, the other side, which is so much harder to get a finger on, is who you are. All right, who you are fills in the gap. You know, and this is hard because it's hard for us to understand, you know, how much what our experience is, what we bring into the gap. For instance, last weekend we talked about, you know, how what's in us, the beads that are in us, they come out because they're in there, right? They don't come out because she keeps bringing them out or he not, you know, bumps me and we bring them out. No, the beads come out because that's what's in there. And so, you know, for some of you, you know, like John Mayer, you know, you may have had a good mom and dad, bad mom and dad. John Mayer's like, you know, fathers, be good to your daughters. They're going to love like you do. Because girls become lovers, you turn into mothers. So fathers, mothers, be good to your daughters. Maybe you had a good mom and dad, maybe you didn't. You know, and so wherever you land on that, this has affected your heart. In a sense, this has infected your heart. And so, you know, you don't have to be married too long to begin to realize that, you know, your spouse can say something or do something that brings up things from previous relationships. I mean, we all get that, right? We have to talk about that. And so what you put in this gap determines, it's going to determine not just by what I see and they do something different, but it's what's going on inside of me. You know, it's the pain from the past. It's the brokenness from the past. It's the joys from the past, the sorrows from the past. It's from moments of abandonment where I just felt like people abandoned me. So I automatically fill in the gap because I assume that's going to continue. So it's what we see and it's who we are. And both of these determine what sign we choose to fill in the gap. Now let me ask you a question. Do you tend to go this way? Or do you tend to go this way? I feel like an optometrist. Do you like this? Or do you like this? Do you go this way or this one? You know, when you get that text in the afternoon that says, honey, I was planning to make dinner. I got a call from my sister. I need you to pick up dinner on the way home from work. Do you assume the worst? Or do you believe the best? You know, when you get that call and it's like, honey, I know I said I'd be there to pick up the kids, but I'm not going to make it. Do you assume the worst or do you believe the best? Where do you fall on this? Which way do you fall? You know, and I know what some of you are thinking. You're like, Kurt, if I could just come up and like tell you a little about my spouse and my situation, listen, you'd put your dumb little signs away. I mean, you'd think those are ridiculous. Well, I get it. Everybody has a story. Right? I know everybody has a story. Listen, I got sad stories that could probably trump your sad stories, all right? I mean, everybody's got a story. I've heard all the stories, and I'm not trying to be insensitive or make light of your difficult situation, all right? It's just that I want you to follow this with me for a moment until the end of the morning. I want you to put your kind of sad story of whatever your unique situation is, because everybody's got a unique situation. I've learned that. People come in, they're like, well, I'm unique. I'm like, you're really not, but I'll listen anyway, all right? Because I've heard it all before, you know, and so I want you to kind of set it aside and just kind of get through the morning, and then at the end of the morning, you can choose if you want to tell me where to shove my dumb signs, all right? You can figure it out at the end of the morning, but, and I know some of you, because this is where people in ministry live. We deal with this all the time. And so, you know, some of you, you're like, well, I wish he would have been here today. You got like the, you know, neck going and it's moving and hips are starting to sway. And, you know, you're like, well, he told me he'd come on Mother's Day. And, you know, and we got in the car this morning and he was like, well, I stayed up late last night. And, you know, I'm not showered, can't make it. I'll meet you at dinner. And you're like, he needed to be here. He needs to hear this. I get that, all right? I totally get that. I know that's where you live in the real world. Just hang with me until we get to the end of this, all right? Because here's the question. The question is more about you. Where do you go mentally in the gap? Do you assume the worst or do you believe the best? Where's your spouse go? Right, where do you naturally go on this? Because here's what I want you to hear this morning. People who stay in love learn to do this right here. People who stay in love learn to believe the best. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if they discipline themselves, if they force themselves, if they're just like, well, regardless, they just learn. People who stay in love for the long haul, they figure out how to believe the best. And it, which means that they are very generous, right? As we're going to see in just a moment, they're very generous with their explanation where there's a difference between the expectation and the behavior. Now, there's a leadership book that was written a number of years ago. It's called The One Thing You Need to Know. And it's written by a guy by the name of Marcus Buckingham. And he's a great leadership guy. He's written, you may know him from the book, Now Discover My Strengths. Strength Finders, it's big. You know, if you work in human resources, you probably come across that before. And in this book, this is a leadership book. It's not a marriage book. It's not a relationship book. It's a leadership book. But in this book, at the very opening of the book, he gives an example of a marriage relationship. And he kind of uses that to make a point throughout the whole book that it becomes the kind of the through line of the whole book, which is in every discipline of life, in every arena of life, in every area of life, in every field, there's like one principle that drives it. And if you can figure out what that one thing is, you will be successful. That's kind of his theory. And so at the beginning of this book, he begins to talk about this illustration of a bunch of researchers going and researching people who are happily married. They've been happily married for 10 years or more. And so they send a bunch of researchers and ask them all kinds of questions. And they decide to ask this one question as their main one, which is, what's the common denominator? If you're happily married, you've been married for 10 or more years, what is the one thing that you do that allows you to stay together happily? All right? And so they ask this question. They kind of assume they knew the answer to this question. All right? They assume they knew the answer from some of the previous research they had done. And in the previous research, they went to unhappy couples, people who were fractured, people who were getting divorced, people who are really at a bad place. And they basically said the same thing. What's the common denominator? And what they discovered with the unhappy couples was that unhappy couples had a huge disconnect in really understanding and knowing who each other is. That's what they found. And so they believe, they said, you know, unhappy couples really don't understand each other. And so they believed that when they studied happy couples, that they would find that the main thing that keeps these couples happy and together is they have a deep understanding of each other. And they have a very realistic view of each other. And you know, the man and the woman, they understand each other. And he's like, well, I'm not going to expect certain things of her because I know she's not good at that, and vice versa. So that's what they expected to find in these happily married couples, a real deep understanding of each other. What they discovered was the exact opposite. They discovered that those who had been married 10 years plus and were happily married had very unrealistic views of each other. In fact, one of the things they did in the study was they would give inventories to the man and they'd ask him to rate himself on certain things. Then they'd give the same inventory to his wife. And she would rate him higher than he saw himself. And vice versa. They'd have her take an inventory, then he'd take an inventory on her. He saw her higher than she actually understood herself to be. You know, over and over, these couples rated each other higher than the other. And their conclusion was, love really is blind. It really, these couples really didn't have a realistic view of each other. And a few other interesting findings. I want to read a couple of them to you. They said a spouse's positive illusion, get this, they use the word illusion, all right? It's like an illusion. A spouse's positive illusion created an upward spiral of love. Now, before you think this is weird and you're like, oh, yeah, I don't do that, this is what made you fall in love, right? I mean, you fell in love and you were like, people around, you thought it like this guy or woman was the greatest ever, right? You couldn't find a fault. People around you are like, well, yeah, but, and you're like, well, yeah, but I mean, you don't understand this. And you know, I mean, you know, you've done this since you fell in love. And so you've had an illusion. This is how you started your love relationship, that your love was actually really blind. Right, and so they said a spouse's positive illusion created an upward spiral of love. The illusion created conviction that this really is the way that it is. The conviction led to security. I can trust myself with this person. Security fostered intimacy, and intimacy fostered love. They said something else here. They said a husband or wife who assumes that their spouse possesses strengths that they think they do not possess themselves will have a strong marriage. In other words, in a marriage where I assume my wife is better at certain things than she thinks she is herself is actually evidence of a strong marriage. And here was their advice. Here's what they kind of concluded from their studies. They said the most, and I love this next word, the most generous explanation. Find the most generous explanation you can give. Figure it out, find it, create it, be creative, force yourself to believe. Whatever you need to do, go out and figure out the most generous explanation and then get this. And they said, and then believe it. Just go after that as if you believe it's true. Come up with the most generous explanation, figure it out, create it. For whatever you need to do, come up with the most generous explanation where there's a difference between expectation and your spouse's behavior. Be very generous in believing the best. And they said, this is one of the keys. So when, you know, she doesn't come home after a full day of work and she's late and you go, well, you know, I know her, she was jam-packed. I'm sure she got behind and there's a good explanation for this. Or I'm sure there's an explanation why, you know, why he didn't do this and he said he would. He said he'd pick up these chores and they're still undone. But I know there's got to be a reason. Come up with a generous explanation. Again, let me ask you, where do you go with this? Are you generous? Or do you just naturally assume the worst? Where do you go? How do you fill that gap in that starts here in your mind? Now, let's get back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. All right, this is so powerful. This is 2,000 years ago, Paul's talking about this, and it may be the key for some of you this morning who've grown so far apart and feel like it's hopeless that we could ever be back together. I mean, the key might be found right here, right here. Or maybe you're against divorce, but man, you're just gutting it out, and it's hard, and you're like, well, we're just going to gut it out. All right, maybe the key is right here. And you don't like it when the phone rings and it's her and she's like, well, I know I said, but, and you hate it when you get a text from him and he's like, well, honey, I'm not going to make it. Can you please? I mean, you know, and here's the thing. What happens if both partners in a marriage live in this world right here, assume the worst all the time? Guess what happens? It just feeds off each other. It like feeds a culture of negativity. And you know what begins to happen is you feed the other spouse and you just go back and forth and it actually, you kind of actually like it because you get to be right, right? You're like, well, I told you he wasn't going to do that. See, I told you he wasn't going to come through. Or see, I told you she was going to talk to her sister and she wasn't going to get dinner. Whatever it is. You know, it's like, you know, let me drill down on this a little bit further. This is really important, all right? Some of us like when our spouse screws up because you get to be right. You get to be right. And it gets you into a cycle where you begin to look for it. I mean, I know my sister told me, you know, she can't pay her bills and here she's got another one. I mean, you begin to look for it and you begin to celebrate it because you like to be right. And you may be winning the argument, you may be winning the points, but you're destroying the most important relationship in your life. And so every single time there's a gap between expectation and behavior, what do we put in there? Here's what Paul says. He says, it, meaning love, always protects. What does it mean to protect? It means to protect the integrity of the relationship. It means that whenever possible, I'm not going to put negative in the gap because I want to keep that out and I'm going to always look for an opportunity to fill it in with what's positive because I want to protect. I want to try to keep love alive. He says it always trusts, or in the New King James Version, it believes all things. It's like love is blind. I'm going to look for a generous explanation. He says it always hopes. I'm going to be hopeful that there's a good explanation. I mean, I really can't understand what could have gone wrong, but I'm going to be hopeful until I find out differently. I'm going to hang on to hope. It always perseveres. It looks for good instead of filling in the negatives in the ledger. How do you do on this? Where do you naturally go? If you and your spouse got into a cycle where you just are feeding off each other, assuming the worst, or are you creating a culture of believing the best? Here's the last thing I want us to see from Buckingham, Marcus Buckingham. Here's his last observation. He said, when you choose to assume the worst, even if there's plenty of history to back it up, even if it's justified, when you choose to assume the worst, you have contributed to the demise of your relationship. You've been a participant. You've participated. You know, and some of you are going, wait, Kurt, I know you got a story. Everybody's got a story, all right? You're like, if I could just tell you about my spouse, I get that, all right? I know there's stories. I want you to hear this one part. If you participate in assuming the worst, you actually contribute to the demise of your relationship, even if it's justified. Right? Even if it's justified, when you mentally allow yourself to assume the worst, it begins to come out in your texts. It begins to come out in your conversations. It begins to come out in your interactions. You're like, huh. You know, in your nonverbal. When you begin to communicate this way and you're assuming the worst, you're contributing to the demise, the deterioration of your relationship, even if it's justified. Even if it's justified. So here's what I want us to do. I want you to take out your connection cards. I want to give you some next steps because this is critical. This is a big one this weekend. And on the back of your connection cards are some next steps. And maybe for you, maybe it's your first week with us, and you're like, man, I'm not sure about this, but this is striking a chord. Man, I encourage you to come back next weekend. Just make it a habit as we trek through this series all the way through June 5th. But here's the big one I want us to look at today. And this is something you've got to decide today. All right, you can't like decide this week when something comes up and there's a gap between what you expected and what he or she did. You got to decide this one right now. All right, you need to just decide, am I going to begin to do this or not? And that is, Are you willing to begin to be generous as you fill in the gap by believing the best instead of having suspicion and hostility? And you got to decide right now. And you can. This is a trajectory changer right here. I mean, if you're wondering how do we get here, is there anything we can do? It can begin with something as simple as saying, I'm going to believe the best. And it may be hard. I may have to force myself. I'm going to begin. And you need to mark it on that card. This isn't for us. We're not tallying these. This is for you to say, you know, I made it. Before me and God right now, I'm saying, God, I want to begin right now. I want to begin to believe the best. And I believe that as you do this, see, there's a promise in 1 Corinthians 13. It says, this kind of love never fails. Well, what kind of love is that? It's a love that believes the best. It's a generous love. I mean, love fails all the time. But Paul says, this kind of love never fails. So if that's what you need to do this week, you're like, yeah, I'm playing the tape in my mind of this past week. I had multiple times I did not believe the best. Hey, decide right now. Things can be different. I can choose to begin a new trajectory. Now the next step is I think we've got over hundreds now, people in the hundreds tracking on the Love Dare Challenge. It's a 40-day challenge, picking up the Love Dare book, and we've got them available at Connection Point. They're $8. If you can't afford it, just take one. If you can't afford it, there's a little card in there on how you can pay for it online. You can go to the resource button in our app, and it will take you to Amazon where you can order a Kindle copy or have a paperback shipped to you. But whether your marriage is in a really good place and you just want to grow it to the next place, or if you're struggling a bit and you need to get healthy, or maybe you're just hanging on by a thread, and you're like, man, we've got to have some major change. Maybe all that's left is signing the divorce papers. I would say don't do anything. Don't do anything until you take the 40-day Love Dare Challenge. In fact, I talked to a couple last weekend after we talked about this for the first time. They came up to me and they said, Kurt, when we came to Crosspoint a few years ago, we were all but done. And that book changed our life. And then they want to say, well, it's not really the book. It's actually the principles that come from Scripture of God reframing our hearts to begin to love on the foundations that He created us to love within. And so this is a game changer. This is a trajectory changer. And it's going to be hard. I guarantee it's not easy. In fact, when you open the first page up, it says, this is a warning. This will not be easy. I hate books that start that way. But that's what it says. And it's challenging me. I'm tracking through it. It's challenging, but it's changing me. So pick one up. Maybe that's your next step. Also, movie in the parking lot. All right, coming up in here in a couple weekends, whether it's outside or inside, you know, we'll be here. If you've seen Fireproof, man, bring a friend, bring a neighbor. If you haven't, make a date of it. You know, go out to dinner, take your spouse or your, you know, whoever you're in a relationship out to a dinner, and then come to the movie afterwards and hang out and just build into each other. Make it a significant event. All right, we're trying to give you very tangible ways for God to maybe help us see things, do things, grow things, change things, that ultimately He, when we submit to the process, does. And I believe that when we do this, as we do this, I think we're going to begin to see a generation of love that takes on a whole new trajectory. I think we're going to begin to see, you know, God impact our individual families and our community and our culture here. And it's just going to spread like a virus when we begin to love out of God's intentions. And I think there's going to be people years from now, they're going to come to you and say, what is it? How do you stay together? You've been married 25 years. Julie and I celebrate 20 this summer. You've been married 20 years. How do you stay together when everybody else is falling apart? And you can tell them, you can say, you know what? It's nothing I'm doing. Man, it's not my strength. You know what it is? God's been doing something in me. God's been doing something. That's what we want for every single one of us. Whether you're in a relationship, heading to a relationship, one day want to be in a relationship. So mark your step, nail it down today. All right, let's stand. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, man, it's a privilege, God, to be able to address you as a heavenly Father. And God, I just ask right now that for those of us who are in this room who have a relationship that's working right now, God, we just thank you for that. We do not take any credit of that. That is something you're doing in us. God, I pray for those who feel like their relationship is hanging on by a thread, and I just pray that there's hope in what we've heard today. God, I just pray that hope would come through your truth. And God, I pray that every single person in here today would be able to have the wisdom to take what we've heard from you and to know what to do with it. God, I pray for the college students in the room, for the singles, for the students, for all of those who have all of this ahead of them. God, I just pray that they would be able to get it right the first time. And God, I pray that as they move into romantic relationships, God, that they would learn how to love and trust and have faith and believe and be generous and to forgive and to be able to deal with the stuff, the beads that are on the inside of their just there, and how to deal with those so that they can stay in their love relationship forever. And God, I just pray that your grace right now would just wash over this place, over every single person, every single relationship, God, that you would just wash your grace over us. And God, as we climb that hill, as we make that ascension, God, as we go on this uphill battle, trying to be the people you've called us to be, God, we also know that's where we find ourselves chasing and closest to you. So God, I just pray that you'd help us to do that this week. Give us the courage and the strength. And God, I pray these things according to your name, according to the character and the identity of Jesus.